seconds. Oh, and a chance there. I mean, really. The Leafs got taken down by Marchand, who ends up scoring into the empty net.
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously wants to get under our skin and you know, and influence the refs. So I think we just got to be, you know, composed and, you know, not kind of get into that, you know, bullshit and just play hard and you know, make him, you know, least effective.
He's a world-class player, both in ability and in how he plays, in the gamesmanship and everything. It's world-class. And been in the league long enough, as you can see, he gets calls. It's unbelievable, actually, you know, how it goes, you know. We got to play through that. We got to play through that stuff. I don't think there's another player in this series that gets away with taking out Bertuzzi's legs the way that he does. He's not one of the players in the series that gets away with that, but he does. It's an art, and he's elite at it.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. Good morning to you.
Yeah, all right, sure.
Brentholomew?
Yeah, Bartholomew. Yeah. Okay, sure. Sun. I was going to say the sun's risen. I don't know about that. I can't see it from the angle I'm sitting at, and who cares if it does? God, good morning. How are we all doing today?
I'm fine.
Yeah, I know. You didn't like that. I know. You want me to, like, be like, it's okay.
No.
I know. You don't need that. I need that.
Why do you always have to, like, you
to pre-decide how you've reacted?
Yeah, I don't know.
I told you. When someone tells me something, they need my opinion on it.
Right.
And when I say something, they need my reaction to it.
No. I'll tell you when you can give your opinion. Mm. Starting now. Okay. So Leafs lose game 3, 4-2. Here's the reason why they lost game 3, 4-2. Well, I mean, primarily because now, okay, we're past the, like, two goals or fewer in a playoff game. We're now 3 goals or fewer in 10 consecutive playoff games, which is apparently an NHL record. I was not on alert for this, but now it is. That's a record. They scored 3 goals once over that span.
How many times would you be willing to be shut out in a regular season game? We're very proud of that record. Like, oh, never shut out. It's like, I don't know, I'd take 10 of them this year if you could just get 5 in a playoff game.
No, that's the new Raptors, at least 1 3-pointer made in NBA record consecutive games, which was a record they held for a while before they won anything. Mm-hmm. But now they won a championship, so that's behind us. All right, Leafs lose because of 2 things. Because they didn't get the superior goaltending performance.
Yep.
And we can talk about Ilya Samsonov's performance because it was a wild game from him.
Yep.
And they lost definitively the special teams battle. If I told you going into the series that that was going to happen, you'd say, yeah, that sounds about right. No?
Yeah, I was going to add one more thing in there, and it's not. No, it's actually not the thing you thought I was going to mention, because I think it's super tied to the second thing. It's a lack of dominant performance from star players. That was not as much on the menu. That was just as much a part of last night, but boy, is that tied part and parcel to the special teams.
That's the power play,
That's 100%. It, right? Because if those guys have a moment on the power play, it doesn't it does matter what they do for the other 56 minutes of the game, but we certainly talk about it a lot less. Yeah. I mean, again, there's a million things I know. You all know who I am, and you all know what I'm thinking about from last night's game. But in terms of what happened involving the players in uniform, yeah, the goalie was great. And both of them were. Yeah. Samsonov was great last night.
Save for one.
But I think that he has given this team every bit good enough goaltending to win in this series if they have just a modicum of offensive success. So
he's playing well enough. There's no question. There is, as much as there was a question going into game 2 as to whether he would start game 2, those have been erased. Like, that's, he now has the leash of the entire series unless he entirely implodes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's Ilya Samsonov's net.
Not to derail the conversation, but, like, let's say Saturday night, 2 bad ones go in early and Joe Wall comes in and is fine. I don't know that means you're definitively not going back to Samsonov again. Like, you have to see how it plays out and Joe Wall and team response, yada, yada. But yeah, I think Samsonov has earned himself a lot of leash, and just forget about that happening in a playoff series. Go back to December and tell yourself that that was going to be happening. It's like, oh, right, leash, because he can run away and they don't care if he has as much leash as he wants because they're never going to pick it up. No, he has a lot of leash now because of the performance he's given him. But having said all that, and this, we haven't had the Freddie Anderson moment from Ilya Samsonov yet, so I'm not going to put this on him. But much like Freddie Anderson, there were a lot of playoff series where you talked about how good Freddie was for the bulk of the series, but the other guy was better. Always a better goalie on the other side of it. And I don't think you can hold Ilya Samsonov accountable for that, but you can't look at anything other than Swayman being, forget the best goalie in the series, obviously. He's been the best player in this series, far and away.
Yeah, there's no question. We've done this before, though, right? Like, here's the thing. You run into good goalies. You don't get to the playoffs. Mm-hmm. You don't end up with home ice advantage, which is generally the case when the Maple Leafs enter the playoffs, save for last season in a series they did eventually win against the Tampa Bay Lightning. You don't get here unless you got good goaltending. Yeah, they've faced a lot of Vezina winners. The guy that's backing up the guy that, my God, has to start on Saturday. It's hilarious that there's even a discussion that Jeremy Swayman.
You know what? I would just like to be on record. Jim Montgomery, if you're listening.
Well, of course.
No, I don't think you're man enough.
Right.
Everyone, you have your plan. You're a Jack Adams winner.
Uh-huh.
You're the defending coach of the year. Mm-hmm. And you have your plan to run Allmark out there, and you're going to let people talk you. So I'd just like to go on record that I don't think Jim Montgomery's man enough to play Allmark in game four.
Yeah.
And I think he's plenty man enough, but that's about the only route I can see is like challenge, like direct challenge to him. Like, bet you won't. Because otherwise, how can you go away from Swayman?
Honestly, if Jim Montgomery is threatening to start Linus Allmark in game four on Saturday,
it's a fireable offense.
How do you not? Like, you got to throw your body in front of that. Like, if you're Brad Marchand, you're like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
I only have so many kicks at the can at this thing. And he was great yesterday. Yeah. And we can talk about the officiating.
Yeah, and I'm going to take a couple of these kicks at Tyler Bertuzzi and no one's allowed to say anything about it.
Sure.
Yeah.
And yes, am I shocked that you said the other thing that wasn't mentioned was the officiating? I am.
Yeah,
but,
I know.
I mean, what does it matter? What does it matter if you're missing a few extra power play opportunities, if you're going to look like the majority of the power play opportunities look like?
I mean, do we want to do this now? Do we not?
What? Yeah, the special teams? I think it's two things. So, okay, we did the Samsonov thing. We'll come back around to it.
Yeah.
Honestly, one of my early notes was when the Leafs are leading 1-0 and Samsonov's making the saves he was making right out of the gates, is Simon Benoit, holy cow, do you look like you're in over your head in the first couple of seconds of that game. Everybody did.
Yep.
Like, just a scramble drill.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no one had ever played hockey before in the first 30 seconds of the hockey game, and then Simon Benoit was like, you think you don't know how to play hockey? Check this out.
He's like, oh, this is the road to 10.9. He's like, this is the road. Over the glass, right in the playoffs.
Unbelievable. Like, just nobody within 20 feet of him?
It's like, these guys can't turn me into the next Larry Murphy if I'm handing out souvenirs. Here you go, sashimi eaters.
Into the crowd, and then 2-minute penalty, and you're like, oh, well, this is going to be a devastating blow to this team who's riding a 4 consecutive home playoff loss streak. But not only do they kill it off, Ilya Samsonov with one 10-beller, a couple of great saves, but the one where at the time you're like, oh, did he make the save? How good a save was that? He actually adjusts to the tip as it's coming in on his pad. Unbelievable. And you're like, that's a momentum swing. The Leafs take the 1-0 lead. He's stopping shorthanded breakaways. And at that moment, I'm telling you, I wrote it down, and maybe it's the reason why it didn't come to fruition.
Well, obviously, assume a good thing will happen.
That kind of performance that you were getting from Ilya Samsonov before the Trent Frederick goal was the reason to believe anything's possible with this Leafs team.
Yeah, Samsonov is going to, until there is an event, and I'm not saying that it can't happen, but until there is an event that knocks him out of this is the level of goaltending you're going to get from Ilya Samsonov. We know what it looks like when it's really bad. And again, I'm not saying you're never going to see that again in these playoffs, maybe not in his career. Almost certainly you will see it again. But we also know what it looks like when this guy's going well. And this isn't something that the Leafs found at the tail end of the regular season. This is the guy they saw for long chunks of last season. This is the guy that was good enough throughout long chunks of that first round series against Tampa Bay and was good enough against Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, the team in front of him wasn't, but he was good enough against Florida until he got injured there. So I think that, yeah, the Samsonov part of it, you mentioned the breakaway save on the shorthand, or I mean, the Bruins were shorthanded, Leafs on the power play. Those are the little checkpoint moments that would have been a backbreaker to Absolutely. Give up that goal there. And could you kill them for it?
No.
But you need to make that save. You needed to come up with a stop in that moment, and he was able to.
Yeah, he was. And he wasn't able to stop the Trent Frederick shot, which is a bad goal. It's a bad goal. There's no debate about it. Now, is it we'll talk to Devin Dubnyk later on. I want to get his opinion on this, like how distracting it might be to have what was happening at center ice between Tyler Bertuzzi and Brad Marchand. And, like, honestly, if we're going to break down the officiating, which we are, and I I know I'm kind of going all over the place, but we're still kind of focusing on the goaltending here. Mm-hmm. But if you're gonna quibble about something about that play, it's the thing 10 seconds earlier where Charlie McAvoy just like absolutely suplexes Auston Matthews behind the net.
It's actually, believe it or not, it's actually all three. Like, I'm sorry. No, like, okay, we're doing it here. I didn't want to lead with this. We're here. The idea that the Leafs getting a makeup call after that happened is like giving a no-armed man a spoon to eat his soup with. It's like, all right, Leafs, here's your makeup call. Uh-huh. You're going on the power play. We all know how well that's going to work out for you. Mm-hmm. That the Leafs were not undone in that game because they didn't get enough calls from the officials. I actually thought they got a pretty good whistle early on. The cross-checking penalty early on in that game, soft. Should not be called. So I can't sit here and say that they were out for the... But to miss a call so egregiously in that spot when it's, and this is the part that drives me the most nuts about it, is that all we ever hear is, hey, don't make these officials look bad, man. Don't make them look bad. Brad Marchand starts every day saying, I'm going to make you look bad. And then for some reason, the whole league has to line up to shake my hand at how good I am, tell me how good I am about it. Brad Marchand highlights there, looking at the refs. Go ahead. My guy's going in on a mini breakaway here. I dare you to call it. You're not going to. And it's that guy that's allowed to be on the other side of it. When he was caught diving in the last game, like, we can all say it should have been a slashing penalty on Tyler Bertuzzi, and it should have. But he was also, like, just go look at the video. He literally grabs the wrong leg when he tries to sell the call. Why are the refs not bothered by that? Why are they? Did they not take more offense to him making them look bad? Quite frankly, all the time. So it's all egregious, and that's the reason why it kills you. It's not that the Leafs didn't get their makeup call. They got it immediately, which tells you how egregious it was. But for a team that struggles to score on the power play, and I'm not saying the Leafs should be officiated differently because they struggle to score on the power play, but to give the team another goal or not negate one, and again, it's all tied together, and this shouldn't be. But the idea that the Justin Hall pick penalty just had to be called because you can't let a goal be called in that instance when you open it up. But I can watch Brad Marchand trip a guy right in front of the refs twice as a player walks in. It's infuriating. Mm. It's not the reason they lost. But I also have such little time. You know, maybe we'll do later today the idea of like what's fair to expect from the crowd in these games. I hate people getting on the fans for being upset about the officiating in that moment. It didn't cost them the game. But it 1,000% cost them that goal. If they just call it on Bert too, make it an even up. But to not call it in that moment, and it literally leads directly to a Boston goal because he's not blowing dead. And then following it up with an immediate makeup call because you know how egregious that was. You can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. You can't take that goal off the board unless Sean Tavares scores it and Justin Hall was the one committing the penalty. Then you have to take it off the board. Infuriating. Not the reason they lost. Could pick at a million other faults of this team. But I loathe the idea that people in this market are crying about the refs all the time. That's a massive swing point in the game. And again, I do think it's all kind of tied part and parcel with the fans and the nervous energy. When things just always go wrong, you expect him to. And maybe I shouldn't draw a through line to the Justin Hall pick penalty 3 years ago. But you know what else? There's people in that building watching that game when they see the refs screw up in that moment, and they're drawing a through line to Gary Frazier and Doug Gilmore in 92. It is just, it's not the only thing, but heartbreak and pain and misery is what ties this fan base together. It is the core tenet of it, unfortunately. And to have that happen in that moment, infuriating, and to have them make it up immediately so they to almost admit to everyone they know how bad that was.
Yeah.
almost worse.
Officiating was bad yesterday in the hockey game. The officiating is almost always bad in just about every postseason game you're going to get. Like, mm-hmm. The NHL officials, not good. Sorry, NHL officials. You know what? Officials in all sports, and part of it is that we all know too much, and we all are able to break down the plays in replay and then cultivate our own replays and look at replays about the replays and, like, different. We have access to all of it.
Yep.
So, in a way, it's not fair. It's not the same scrutiny that an official would get even 10 years ago, right?
Totally.
But it's bad. That was bad. In the grand scheme of things, though, okay, that's a goal that can't go in. Trent Frederick goal is a bad goal.
Yep.
On Ilya Samsonov.
Do you not think he was a little distracted?
In the moment when it's happening and you hear it being described by Chris Cuthbert, you're like, what is happening as the play is going down the ice? And then it's only upon replay do we see that it's, you know, it's just an absolute melee at center ice between those two. Again, following what I think is a more clear, egregious penalty by Charlie McAvoy, taking down the best player in the series,
Austin Matthews. You're allowed to call that too.
Behind the net. But here's the scenario, Brent. Leafs had gotten the majority of the power plays to that point. I believe it was 3-1 power play opportunities in favor of them. They were leading the hockey game 1-0.
Yep.
So you can't possibly put them on the power play. Again, NHL officiating is all bad.
Yeah.
The Maple Leafs are the Blue Jays, though, right now, where the margins are so thin because they can't score, because this team that is the second highest scoring team in the National Hockey League during the regular season that had a power play that once upon a time was the second best in the NHL, faltered all the way down to seventh overall in the regular season. Now all of a sudden is clicking at less than 10% in the postseason. You got to score on one of those five power play opportunities.
To me, they're just two different conversations. Like, I agree. If we're going to do the Blue Jays analogy, though, that Marchand Bertuzzi is not getting squeezed on the edges in a 1-1 count. That's like calling strike three at a ball at his head. Like, that is so egregious, and it had such a swing point moment in the game. And again, if we want to have a conversation, and we'll talk about all the elements of this. The Leafs power play is the chief reason they lost that game, and its complete ability to do anything. It's not the
refs. Jeremy Swayman.
They didn't, sure.
And maybe they're related.
I think they're completely related.
I mean,
let me sneak in one more quick one.
Sure.
While we're doing this, it's like also definitive or not. It's like the guy might have put his hand on the puck in the crease during a penalty, and it's like, oh, gee, maybe that would have helped, foster things along a little more. But to your point, like, the Leafs, they have more power plays in Boston, so you couldn't possibly assume they did anything wrong in that spot.
Yeah. I don't know. So it's true. Maple Leafs, there were some calls that didn't go in their favor. They got the majority of the calls. I think the more egregious one is the one where this team, who has been, had some pretty spectacular 6-on-5 moments during the regular season, had some pretty spectacular 6-on-5 moments in the postseason last year. To me,
all of it.
That's the one that's the most egregious. The John Tavares having his stick stuck between a Bruins player's leg and who's actively squeezing his legs together to hold the stick there, called for holding, which just effectively ends the hockey game.
Yep. And he was holding him, and that's fine.
To me, that has a more direct impact. I understand, a goal goes in.
That's the thing. And maybe this goes to the, like, I won't say hobby horse, but it's like, I think we all try to have, like, it's funny to put it this way, but it's like, we all try to have, like, a take about the game that's not just, like, a big picture thought. We try to look at it. And the thing I've been hammering home, and I will continue to in these playoffs, is flashpoint moments. And the Leafs didn't lose that game because of the refs, but if that Trent Frederick goal, if the whistle blows, forget Samsonov doesn't make the save, but the whistle blows, is that not a completely different hockey game? And they don't give up that goal there, and they go into the second period, and it's not 1-1, but it's 1-0. And it's entirely possible the rest of the game plays out in a somewhat similar manner. But you can't tell me that giving up that weird quite frankly, yes, bad goal at that moment didn't suck some of the winds out of their sails or affect the game one way or another. Of course it did. So, yes, the power play, yes, but it's that one flashpoint moment. How different does the game play out? And we could do this with a million things. How different does the game play out if Ilya Samsonov doesn't make that save on the shorthanded breakaway for Boston? Mm-hmm. Much differently, but he did.
I just don't know what to do with the officiating thing. It's like, yeah, well, okay, the officiating was bad. It's generally bad. You can't count on it not being bad. It's likely to be bad. I mean, maybe I guess what you're hoping for is that it's bad in a more least positive direction.
No, let me put it
that Brad Marchand now through three games has not taken a single penalty or has not received a single penalty minute in these three games, that maybe that's, you know, maybe, and Sheldon Keefe did mention Brad Marchand's ability to toe the line and evade the officials.
Okay, but I want to talk about that. Like, does he have some special ability to toe the line, or is it a thing where he gets the benefit of the doubt and then we talk about that special ability that he possesses? And I'm not blind to the reality that guy comes in, he's a young Bruin on the 2011 team, he's in the playoffs all the time, he's looked at as a winner guy, we look at him differently. I'm not blind to that reality. I would just like someone to bluntly state it. We talk about this man. He's got such an ability to walk the line. Yeah, he plays the game to a different standard. He's officiated in a different way. You know, it'd be pretty good at walking the line in that regard. Michael Bunting would have been pretty good at walking the line in that regard if you just never called it for him. But it was actually the opposite, where he was seen to be making the refs look bad and you're hurting the ref's image. Well, then we saw what happened the other way. Why does it never, ever go the other way? I understand that Sheldon Keefe, I don't want him whining and crying. I think that's the right tack to take. You take that tack publicly and then tell Treliving or whoever to argue with the series officiator.
I mean, you have to make it known that you're displeased, which he did. I think in the comments that we played off the top of the show, like, we all understand what he's saying there. It's like, hey, way to go, Brad Marchand. You're fooling the officials. Officials, you hearing this? Yeah. Like, he's fooling you. And you hope that things turn out a little bit differently on Saturday.
You want to know what I think is going to happen? Wow. I think they're going to ding him for one inconsequential penalty early on in that game four on Saturday, and then that'll be the last penalty we see called on him the rest of the series. You know that's how it's going to go.
Rest of the series would be quite a thing. But
why? He's gone three games. Yeah. He has committed infractions in every single game, and he's made it nearly half the series, so why would it be so strange to think he could do the exact same thing again?
Okay, so that's certainly a part of it. The officiating, again, I don't know what to do with that.
I would just like it on record that when I was putting together my order of topics, I literally did everything and then said, okay, officiating is what I wrote down in my notes. So I wanted on record that I did not think that was the most pertinent thing to start with, but it does have it dips its toe into every other discussion, so it's hard to avoid it.
Okay, so Leafs had, just factually, the majority of the power play opportunities. They had not quite 10 minutes because one of those power plays was interrupted. And, the Bruins scored one of their two power play goals. The second one doesn't count because it's into an empty net. Mm. They had one power play goal in the game. They were 1-for-2 on the power play. They weren't 2-for-3, okay? They were 1-for-2 on the power play in an abbreviated power play. They didn't even need the full 2 minutes. Imagine that in the second period after a 4-on-4 with the Leafs. Like, felt like they were already killing the penalty. They wanted nothing to do with that 4-on-4 to start the third period. Anyways, Leafs go 0-for-5 on the power play.
Yep.
The first power play opportunity in the first, 30 seconds, it was revelatory. And then, of course, they give up a short-handed breakaway. Yep. But it was like, oh, my God, there it is.
Yep.
And there were, few and far between moments. Jeremy Swayman had an incredible sequence later on in the hockey game on the power play. But this is the same old saw for this team. We've done this time and time again, the power play clicking at under 10%. The one time they've gotten something close to their regular season level of power play production, last postseason, where they won a freaking round. Like, it's hard to look at anything else other than the team that is supposed to score the goals, and before they started adding physically tough players, their toughness was the 5-on-4. Man, you're soft. You're soft in that area. Because it's not just it appears in the postseason. It trends in that direction every regular season. And it is, okay, sometimes you run into a hot goalie. Again, that's where they live, is in the postseason. It doesn't matter. When you have the game-breaking talent that you have, you have to score on the power play. This team's just incapable of doing it in the postseason.
Yeah, it has been the Sahara when you've looked for them to, like, it has just been drought city when you've looked for them to have the big kind of impact, momentum, swinging goal. The worst part of this is we all saw the writing on the wall heading into the series. There's not a person that cared about, thought about, you know, analyzed this team that didn't see this being among the one or two reasons they were going to lose the series.
Yeah.
I think the other thing that is frustrating regarding it is, I mean, we had the Matthews game in game two. He's allowed to have back-to-back games, by the way. He could have popped a little more last night, certainly. But
yeah, it wasn't actively good yesterday.
But
apparently under the weather as well.
So this is what I don't mean this with him. If you're playing, you're good to go, and I mean this for Marner as well. But how much game-breaking talent do they have right now? William Nylander's not there. This is a guy, again, like 10th in the NHL in scoring this year, was second on the team in power play points. Auston Matthews, I'm like, he's playing. I'm not going to sit here and give him like, oh, he's sick. But he's clearly a slightly diminished version of himself. But he's also never been a power play merchant. He scores a lot there because he scores a lot everywhere. But it's never been, that's been where he's so dominant. And then Marner. I mean, we had all the conversation yesterday. He had the moment setting up the Knies goal. But you haven't really seen it popping from him in this exact moment. How much elite talent do they have right now? This isn't me making excuses for him. I'm just, like, it's like, you on a hold, John Tavares, feet to the fire, go for it. Mitch Marner, go listen to yesterday's show. But are we, when we think of the high-powered, high-flying Leafs, it's like, I think we all have to recalibrate John Tavares is. Okay. He's 65-point JT. Like, I'm...
So it's coming down to one player, because this is, like I said, this is the second highest scoring team during the regular season. Yep. They're missing William Nylander, and that sucks. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a huge loss. Okay.
And this isn't me going Toronto Sun. This is me just having the conversation. Are they're not missing Mitch Marner. He's playing. He set up the goal.
Uh-huh.
But this is not $10.9 million Mitch Marner.
Uh-huh.
Whether he's dealing with something, whether the high ankle sprain never really healed up, whatever. It's clearly not that player. You just see the lack of jump, the ability to, I mean, he always seemed to find two or three moments to just kind of shake loose and have all this time and space when he's at his best. When was the last time you saw that from him?
Okay, if this isn't enough, and like you said, if you're on the ice, if you're playing, you're good enough.
Yep.
Right? We can evaluate you. Yeah, you maybe at the end of the postseason, we can say, well, all right, maybe you weren't at 100%, but who's at 100% at this point in the postseason?
Yep.
And certainly by the end of the postseason, you'd be even more banged up if you were lucky enough to get that far. If this isn't enough, if the Toronto Maple Leafs do not have enough, then at the salary cap limit, after the acquisitions last offseason and Bradford Living having to catch up to speed like very quickly, but all the additions made with the express purpose of increasing the scoring potential on this hockey team. If this isn't enough, you gotta have major questions and major conversations about the entire makeup of this hockey team. And you guys like almost start from scratch. You can't because you have guys under contract and some people who are running out of their contract, but have full no-move clauses. Mm-hmm. If this isn't enough, I don't know what to tell you.
Well, I was just thinking about it, because the idea heading into this series, and this was more when we thought they were playing Florida than Boston, but the idea should still hold, was that it didn't need to all be on your $10 million+ forwards. You should put a lot on them, and you should ask a lot on them, but the idea was that there was going to be more secondary scoring. Now, the Leafs aren't losing the series because Bobby McMahon hasn't played a game in it yet, but that's a piece. Like, part of the reason we had the confidence in that was Bobby McMahon. Bertuzzi and Domi, they've both had their moments in the series. Bertuzzi scores last night.
Yeah, they both scored.
But they largely go how Auston Matthews goes, right? Like, I think it's pretty safe to say. And then you look at the Nylander Marner. I mean, Nylander hasn't played at all. Marner clearly not the best version of himself. And again, I'm not saying that to be an excuse. It's just all of the things that you thought in terms of offense from this team, all the reasons why you had yourself feeling good and flying high. They've kind of dropped by the wayside. Even, you know, your Yarncroc, Holmberg, people, and, you know, include myself saying, hey, that's a third line. Yeah, but you feel differently when Nylander's on the right side of that line driving the bus and creating things than when it's Nick Robertson. And even Nick Robertson, he's a guy you think can come in off the bench or, sorry, out of the press box and score a big goal for you. But not if he's asked to drive the line. Generally speaking, he's kind of thrived when there's been another skill-ish player around him. Sorry, Holmberg and Yarncroc, that's not exactly you. So it is amazing what a house of cards this Leafs kind of forward depth seems to be. You take one, the way I'd look at it is like you take one and a half pieces out. It's like Nylander's not there, and I guess two full pieces. It's like McMahon's a half piece. Marner is playing, but he's not driving it the way you need him to. You're kind of missing a half piece there, and then you're missing Nylander. It is amazing what a house of cards it does kind of look like.
I mean, okay, could it be better at 5-on-5? Sure, it could be better. I think it's okay at 5-on-5. It's hard for me not to look at the reason the Maple Leafs are down 2-1 in this series is, one, because penalty kill's no good, which, I mean, that has nothing to do with what we're talking about here.
No, zero.
But the power play, specifically, hasn't been good enough. Mm-hmm. You get five power play opportunities, you got to score at least once, if not twice. And that's a different, I mean, it's a different conversation we're having about the hockey game. I mean, then you're scoring four goals, minimum three, right? Mm-hmm. And I guess the NHL record is 10 games with three or fewer. A couple of times, finally, you break free of that, that old saw. Again, go back to the first round series against the Tampa Bay Lightning. Finally look like they're capable selves at the 5-on-4. It's the first series they win in almost 20 years. That's, I mean, and okay, I can hear you on Nylander helps it, but this is...
No. I think the Nylander helps it, sure. No, I don't want to make this about one guy, but it's like, who's supposed to be the engine in the power play? Auston Matthews is supposed to rip it home, sure. But, like, the Leafs power play has never hummed along. All we ever try to do is kick Morgan Rielly off of it, okay? Like, even when he's there, unless it's playoff Mo, all we're trying to do is, can we get Liljegren in there? So he's not supposed to be the straw that stirs the drink there. We know what John Tavares is. He's supposed to win his draws, be in front, win puck battles, and yeah, you can hold him accountable as well. But John Tavares is not supposed to be the driver. He's not supposed to be the engine of the Leafs power play. It's two guys. Matthew's supposed to rip it home. Marner's supposed to be magic on the half wall. And neither of those things is happening on the power play in this series. I think Matthews gets like a stay of execution, for lack of a better term, because of the full body of work. And we're literally a game removed from him putting the team on his back. But we're talking about the power play. It's those two guys, man. Yeah. It is.
Oh, there's just no question.
Yeah, I know. I wasn't saying that like you're going to be like, no, it's Bertuzzi's fault.
No, okay, it's the star players.
So then...
That's what they played, and especially when you get a delay like they had on the one power play where they're out there for the whole 2 minutes. That's what we're talking about. Yeah, you're right. Like, substitute power play for star players.
Yeah. It's the same conversation.
That's the thing. And it's like, you can talk about it being hard to score in the postseason, especially 5-on-5, because... Agreed. Holy cow. And like the hits, the NHL record, like most hits through 40 minutes in a postseason game in what, like 8 years, and everybody on the ice having at least one hit.
McCabe, the last guy.
The first period for a scoreless hockey game was electric. What an electric, electric hockey game. But yeah, no, it's very difficult to score 5-on-5 in the postseason because there's just not a lot of room out there. You know where there's a lot of room? When you remove one player from the ice.
Right.
Like when the opposition has factually one fewer player, one less player than you, you can move it around. You can do your skilly dipsy doodle whoopty doos, right? You can do that.
You can.
That's your time. Do your thing and then have the puck end up in the back of the net. Haven't been able to do it. That's supposed to be your biggest weapon. It's supposed to negate everything. You haven't been able to do it. It's the number one failing over the last decade of Leafs teams in the postseason.
Looking at the power play time on ice last night, I do wonder then, like, do you need to find more time for Max Domi? I don't know that it needs to come necessarily at the expense of Mitch Marner, but Domi is a guy who has shown some ability to create. He hasn't done it on the power play because he got no time there, but, I mean, we've all heard the stat banded over our head. What is it? It's like only Connor McDavid had more 5-on-5 assists than Max Domi this year, whatever the number was. Domi's shown an ability to create. The only forwards that actually played on the power play last night that had less time than him were David Kampf for 28 seconds, and then I don't know how he did it. I hope no one tells Keith that this happened, but Pontus Holmberg snuck out there for 5 seconds of a power play as well, but I do go there of, again, not to absolve Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews of the pressure that they kind of rightfully should have to produce at that spot. But Domi's been a guy who has shown chemistry with the guy who's most likely to score. It's not that he didn't play. He got over 2 minutes of power play time last night. So it's not to say they're not using him in that regard, but it's not an easy fix. Cause I think the easy fix is like going like Jeremy Swayman falling in a pit somewhere or something. That's the easy fix. But I would like to see Domi get more kind of run out there.
Something. Like, you got to do something. It's just hard for me to imagine. So what? Like, you sub out Bertuzzi for Domi? I mean, this is all going to change. We assume on Saturday. Now, my take of William Nylander not playing in the rest of the postseason seems like less and less likely because everybody seems of the opinion now with the extra day off. And sorry to Jim Montgomery, it happens in the beautiful city of Toronto. You have to stay at the Ritz-Carlton for an extra day.
Poor him.
How devastating that is.
Love his family.
That'll allow William Nylander to re-enter the fray, and out goes Tyler Bertuzzi. I mean, the thing is, that loaded up forward power play has largely, until Mitch Marner got hurt down the stretch with a high ankle sprain. Mm. But we got a large sample of that. It's still no good. It's not good enough. And do you, if you're Sheldon Keefe, say, I don't care if, like, yeah, obviously this team is going to be evaluated on the performance of the star players, and it makes, like, I can't run a number one power play unit without the $40 million worth of forward, but it hasn't worked. Like, how much of a sample do we need that it has not been effective? And you just say, what the hell? I don't care. Like, Austin Matthews, you got to stay in the number one power play unit because you've scored 70 goals. Mm-hmm. Over the regular season and the postseason, but somebody else, like, just, and maybe split it up. Maybe that's how you solve it, is that you just, you separate the forwards in the two units and you run more of a 60 second power play unit. The fact that we've got perilously little personnel change on the 5-on-4 this season, it being as ineffective as it has, I mean, it's been a little bit mind-boggling. It's not mind-boggling because those guys are getting paid the money that they're getting paid to score the power play, and we've seen it at times be super effective, but it's now, like, what, 3 months since it's been really good.
What's mind-boggling to me is that we can be correct to talk about the 7th best power play in the NHL this way.
Yeah.
7th best.
No, but they've been one of the worst for, like, the last month and a half.
Right. And then they also had the month of February where they were 50% and nobody could keep them up. That is, I only say that to say that this is not a personnel issue. This is a things get gummed up, things get static. They have there's no world where it's an issue of not having the right lever to pull. And again, this is like the conversations we have all the time about the lines. We get so bogged down to, like, This is the number one line of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Etch it into stone. No, this is the number one line of the Toronto Maple Leafs right now. And in a week, maybe it's the same. In a week, maybe it's different. That's the exact same way the power play should operate. The other part of this as well, and, you know, like, I don't want to make this all about one guy, but if we're talking about moving people around, he's a big part of it, is that I think they're so hesitant to, let's say it is a splitting up of the units and you're splitting Matthews and Marner. That's as easy to say, okay, one gets one gets the other. The power play, in theory, is supposed to be where Marner's able to drive this confidence from. This is clearly a player who is, I'm not saying his, like, confidence is shaken, but, you know, we saw the cover of the paper. We've seen how he's played through the first three games of this. It'd be hard to say it'd be at an all-time high right now. I think there is such an element of not wanting, and it's, you have to coach different players in different ways. I think if this was William Nylander going through this exact same thing, Sheldon Keefe would just put him where he feels he needs to put him, because Nylander's been adamant about, hey, do that with me. It doesn't affect me, or I actually kind of need it sometimes. I don't think that's the case with this player.
It's a very disappointing loss for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yes, agreed. God, that was a lot of talking to say that.
Yeah, I mean, the series isn't over by any stretch of the imagination. But yeah, to go down 2-1, a very winnable hockey game, when you take the lead, when you do all the right things early in the game to get the crowd on your side and then for it to disappear. And we'll have that conversation later on as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, just like the referees, like, I don't know what you're supposed to do about it. Like, it's just, you can talk about it and it being an impact, maybe, maybe not on the product on the ice, but it's like, okay, well, that's an observation, I suppose, but it's not something that there's like a cure-all for even a resolution for.
Could go full Ballmer. Yeah. Just like, you better earn these seats on the wall.
Okay, maybe we'll have that conversation later on. We'll talk a little Blue Jays, though, next, as Addison Barger makes his debut. Oh, it was an eventful one.
It's like an error in left field. Seems so quaint after everything we've talked about here. I don't even know. Did they score it as an error? Who knows?
That and more next, as the Fan Morning Show continues. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hey, it's Ailish Forafar.
And I'm Justin Cuthbert.
Join us as we discuss the most important sports stories of the day and tee up the biggest games of the night.
It's The Fan Pregame, 6 p.m. weekdays on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Morning show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. Blue Jays lose in Kansas City 3-2 yesterday. Looking for the series split this afternoon against the Royals. They didn't play perfectly. Shame on them. Shame.
For shame.
They have to play absolutely perfectly defensively to win baseball games, because now 16 games in a row without more than 5 runs, that's a lot. It's also the 6th fewest runs in franchise history that they've scored in over the course of the first 25 games of a season. It's not ideal, okay? Mm-mm. It's not what you want. I will say, at a certain point, the top three dudes in the order, and maybe it's starting to happen with George Springer, who hits a home run yesterday to straightaway center field, which I didn't realize was possible in that ballpark, because there are a couple of balls hit really, really hard. Mm-hmm. One off the bat of Daniel Vogelbach, another off the bat of Addison Barger, which was almost 400 feet to straightaway center field. That is a difficult ballpark to hit a home run in.
Yeah, I didn't know we were back at the Polo Grounds.
George Springer capable of doing it, though, but not quite enough in a one-run loss. Barger, though, is the lead item, because he makes his major league debut after Kevin Kiermaier hits the IL. Seemed like the clear and obvious choice because he's a left-handed hitter, because he's an outfielder. It would have been Aurelvis Martinez, I suppose, if there was a need on the infield. There isn't, and Addison Barger can play third base as well. It is hilarious. Now he's played the outfield. Like I said, it is hilarious that this guy, who's played 5 times in right field this season, literally enters the major leagues of baseball, and upon having a conversation with the media for the first time, is like, left field. Yeah, no, never played that in any level of baseball. Now, left field, right field, you would generally think, hey, what's the difference? There is a sizable difference, and I think on the one ball that he missed, which was not an error, the error was trying to collect the ball on the warning track, does not end up in an unearned run, but that's a pretty crucial, like Dalton Varsho playing left field, Blue Jays might win that game, scoring just 2 runs. But yeah, it's hilarious that you're asking this guy on, according to him, 20 minutes sleep.
Amazing.
To play a position he's never played at any level of baseball and misplays a ball. It's just a difficult chance, and it's left field. Yep. And again, I keep saying, like, Adam Lind's played out there. Edwin Encarnacion has played left field.
There have been some statues out there, yeah.
Yeah, and he makes a great play later on in the ball game. Like, he's capable. He's an athletic kid, but it's hilarious, yeah. Hey, here, be the power source for a team that has no power. Also, go out there, kid, and play a position you've never played in your life.
Yeah.
It's fun stuff.
Yeah, and, you know, it's just like the way the ball spins on you, left-handed hitter, right-handed hitter, you're just kind of backwards, right, is the way you're doing it. Just copy-paste all conversations we've had about TJ Brody playing the right side to right and left field there. It's like, yeah, it's not impossible. It's just backwards and harder.
Yeah.
And, yeah, the other funny thing about it is how, you know, not everybody has as eventful a first game as him, where he, like, everything he hits is at least like 90 miles an hour off the barrel. He smokes the pitcher. Yeah. But that thing does happen so often in baseball where the ball just finds you. It happened last year with Matt Chapman, where the ball found him in that he was up at the plate every time there was a runner on base. And he's like, I don't want to be here. Can we just skip my turn, please? But somehow it found a way for Barger to be in that spot. And that, again, that's a tough play. Like, you're, to your point, he rightfully so gets charged with the error, not on not making the catch, but bumbling the ball with the track. That is a tough play, but it's just, this is the, it's just a tale as old as time. You put a guy in a spot he's not supposed to be in, or you put a rookie in a game hoping, okay, we can ease him in here. It always finds a way.
I'm curious to see how he looks, though, because this guy, you mentioned it, the exit velocity on some of those at-bats. I mean, getting a two strikes and still getting a piece of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he looks very hitterish to me. A guy that's taken his fair share of walks with the Bisons this season, hits from the correct side of the plate for this team, and the left side, not the right side.
No, the correct side
of the plate.
That's good. Good job.
He's got the power potential, which we almost saw again. Mm-hmm. Boy, and this Blue Jays team has seen, like, over the last 10, 15 years, some incredible debuts. A couple of guys come to mind, obviously, from last season, Davis Schneider at Fenway Park, but, like, go back to J.P. Aaron Sebia, Alek Manoah, also his debut at Yankee Stadium. Yep. If we're going to go pitching side of things, kind of had a feeling that, like, yesterday might have been another one of those with Addison Barger. No, I'm intrigued to see what he provides, considering what he's done every healthy season he's had in professional baseball. Last year, he wasn't fully healthy.
Yeah, and it's a, he's actually in a perfect spot where that if he performs, there's a role for him. There's a job-ish to be won, but because of how he's come up, like, this isn't even a Relvis Martinez coming up where you're going, all right, bombs, let's go. I've seen it. I've seen the clips. Barger feels like he's in a sweet spot as a rookie where it's not that you expect nothing from him, but he can just kind of go be one of these faceless men in the bottom third of the order, and it's hard. I mean, you do anything, you look like you're really succeeding the way the bottom third of this order has hit for this team this year. So I think that also, like, we talk a lot about expectations and what guys come up with. He seems like he's in the sweet spot to be able to thrive with. There are people intrigued by him, but I think it's that. It's a, there's trepidation to be anything more than that because of what he is as a prospect.
So Blue Jays one game over 500 still. This is not going to be a good offensive team. It's going to be better than this, I would think. I mean, maybe not. Maybe they are a bottom five offense in all of Major League Baseball. Maybe Bo Bichette's going to have the worst offensive year of his entire career. I'm done thinking, like, I'm done doubting this guy. So I don't think that's going to happen. Maybe Vladimir Guerrero Jr., like, last year wasn't the low point of his career. I tend to think it is closer to the low point, and then he's going to be better. I mean, I think John Schneider's kind of right when he says, yeah, it's, you know, we're not hitting yet. We're still, like, kind of hanging in there record-wise. Like, if this is the low point of the offense, where, like, everybody outside of Dalton Varsho, who was on base again three times yesterday, and like I said, I don't know why you'd pitch to the guy. He takes two walks yesterday. Yeah. Like, why would you ever pitch to Dalton Varsho right now the way the rest of this Blue Jays lineup is constructed? It's Dalton Varsho, it's Justin Turner, and then it's who else? Like, maybe now George Springer's hot after a couple of hits, including a home run, but those are the two guys. That's it. There's nobody else on this team that's hitting, and still they find themselves a game over 500 thanks to the incredible starting pitching that they've gotten. Included in that was Yariel Rodriguez, is, I think, like, pretty respectable four innings of work.
Yeah, I don't think this is going to be a bottom five offense in baseball, but I have zero problem seeing it being a bottom 10 one throughout the season. You're right with Bichette. Like, I expect him to turn it around. I think Vladdy's going to be a streaky player. I think we're going to see times where we have the conversation of, oh, do we need to reset expectations, or what's fair, Vlad? And then he'll kind of come crashing back down to earth. I expect there to be two or three kind of peaks and valleys with him this year in that regard. And then I think Springer and Turner, you know, Turner a little more consistent. Springer can kind of go back in the time machine and find it. I do think they're really going to struggle this year. Not quite to this extent. Mm-hmm. I also don't think this is, I'm not saying he's going to revert back to what he was last year, but it's like, this is the peak of Dalton Varsho, what you're seeing from him right now. Like, there's going to be, I think, some regression to the mean. Or, I mean, again, if he's this, he's just an MVP candidate, and then good job. You traded Moreno for an MVP candidate. Yeah. We got to give you nothing but plaudits there. I don't think they did that. I could be wrong. I don't think they did that.
No, I think it's possible that Dalton Varsho is has an OPS over 800 on the strength of a bunch of home runs. Mm-hmm. He's taken a few more walks recently. I think that's more as a result of the rest of this lineup being as inept as it looks and the opposing game plan being like, don't give him anything to hit because he's like the only guy that can hurt you. But yeah, if he's got an OPS over 800 and playing the defense that he's capable of playing, and especially now that he's the center fielder every single day, pencil his name into the lineup until Kevin Kiermaier returns. And even when Kevin Kiermaier returns, if Addison Barger's hitting, like maybe Kevin Kiermaier is the fourth outfielder on this team. Like maybe we're not seeing him nearly every day, which kind of I thought was the ideal scenario for him when he was signed last season. And his offense just required him to be playing every single day. Anyways, before we take a break, also Alek Manoah, we were doing this like start by start in the minor leagues for him. But after a very good start and another very bad one, 3 innings, 6 earned runs, 7 hits, 4 walks, 5 strikeouts, but a couple of home runs. And it's noted that that happens on the same day that Yariel Rodriguez has like another very, again, respectable start. This guy's not stretched out. He's not going to give you 100 pitches. He's not going to go deep into ball games. But yeah, him and Bowden Francis as like a combined fifth starter on this team, it's been more than effective. And it's changed the outlook for Alek Manoah. And from the comments that he's given us, I would think his mentality is like, I just have to be healthy and prove that I can throw 100 pitches and I'm back in the major leagues. I don't think that's the case, man. If this continues at this rate, 30 days are going to elapse on this rehab assignment.
Yeah.
And you're going to be optioned back down to AAA.
That's what performance should indicate. I just have been reading the tea leaves of how much a part of the team he feels like. And maybe I'm wrong to do that, but it just... it seems like it's going to be a pretty big kick in the shins for, let's be honest, he'll feel it somewhere else, but I'll say shins because it's not yet 7 a.m, that when, if he is optioned and he's no longer on this team, he certainly feels like a part of this team, a part of the furniture when you see him and obviously wasn't there yesterday, he was performing, but he has been with the team. So yeah, I think that's the way it's trending. I think that's the way you should do it. I also think it's far from a certainty that that's the way it plays out also.
The finale of this 4-game series this afternoon, 2:10 first pitch on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Jose Berríos trying to run his record to 5-0, keep that under ERA under 1 against Cole Reagans going for the Kansas City Royals. All right.
Sounds like a ball player. Got to say, Cole Reagans sounds like a ball player.
It's good ball player name. All right. Good hockey name next. Justin Bourne of Real Kipper and Bourne as the Fan Morning Show continues. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590. The Fan.